I basically had an oncologist that I no longer work with, and he had just made up his mind I was going to die from this. Death is not in my direct control, but I can control everything before that happens. And so I basically was very pragmatic with him, and I'm like, look, there's three scenarios. I am very actively dying, or it's a little more slow growing than what you think, or option three, it's like unicorns, puppies, rainbows, and Care Bears, and there isn't any cancer in me because I've been taking great care of myself and I feel excellent. And then I can make a life decision based on factual information. And when I got the news from the doctor, I looked him straight in the eye and I said, someone has to be in the 8%. Why can't it be me?
The key to life, it isn't money. It's happiness. And when you measure how happy you are, you actually become even more happy. Our friends at GoBundance, the tribe of millionaires, use a very specific tool to measure their happiness. It's called the Life Happiness Index. And you can have it too. Go over to GoBundance.com/LHI and take your Life Happiness Index assessment. You'll rate yourself in multiple categories on exactly how happy you are and get a custom output for you specifically that you can use in developing whatever goals you have for your life. GoBundance is the tribe of healthy, wealthy, generous people who choose to live epic lives. And the tool GoBundance members use at the base of all of that is the Life Happiness Index. Get out there and grab life big. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Tribe of Millionaires podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Gruber. Today's guest, Jen Brockstermann, is an athlete, CrossFitter, coach, nutritionist, and she may be the most resilient person I've ever interviewed. What do you hear her story? She has an insane ability to survive and even thrive despite some of the most dire circumstances. And she also, through all of that, has learned a ton about business ownership, financial independence, financial security, and building businesses around not using all of her time. We're going to dive into all of it. So Jen, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm so pumped to be here.
Of course. Great to have you. There's a line that you had as you were going through something pretty significant in your life. And the question you asked yourself was, why can't I be in the 8%? Can you explain what that means?
Yeah. So a week after I turned 34, I am young, healthy, a high-level Canadian CrossFitter, a business owner, a registered dietitian. Things were going swimmingly well. And then I got a phone call from a blocked number. And the hospital was calling me after a colonoscopy to tell me that I had a super invasive cancer that started in my reproductive system as ovarian cancer and had grown so large that it had grown up and into my digestive tract. And basically, for how aggressive the cancer was and how late that they caught it in the diagnosis process, I was told I had an 8% chance I would make it 5 years from now. And lo and behold, this past October that just happened was my 5-year anniversary. And when I got the news from the doctor, I looked him straight in the eye and I said, someone has to be in the 8%. Why can't it be me? Best ride of my entire life.
No doubt. Did you feel anything? Was there any pain that you had that indicated there might be a problem?
No. So here was the kerfuffle of it all. Is it took 5 years to finally get an accurate cancer diagnosis. So it started when I was 29, 5 years prior. And, you know, like many women, I take great care of myself, but you do your annual physical, you get a pap test with your doctor, and something came up as abnormal at the time. So I did my due diligence. You're supposed to go back for like follow-up aftercare and further testing. I did all the recommended additional testing. And you always hear in the medical system, no news is good news. No one ever called me to say that my follow-up pap tests had any sort of a problem. So I went on living my life and thinking everything was okay. And I just had a one little blip. And it turns out it wasn't okay. They just didn't read the report. And so at that time, when I went and did all the follow-up testing I was supposed to do, it came back with abnormal cancer cells. And it said negative for cervical cancer, but abnormal malignant cells have been detected. Further investigation is warranted to rule out if this is uterine or ovarian cancer. And no one said anything to me. So I'm continuing to live my life. I'm a dietitian. I'm eating well. I'm a foods and nutrition university prof. I'm still doing CrossFit at a high level, but I kept getting really sick. So I would catch a cold that would take me like 6 weeks to get over. And then I caught the flu and I got hospitalized with the flu because I was like near death experience with the flu. My body just couldn't overcome it. And thank goodness for that emergency room physician. He was like, something isn't adding up in your case. I had all this mucus in my lungs. I was really sick to my stomach digestively. I was not recovering from this flu despite, you know, weeks in bed and taking good care of myself. And he's like, you might have, this will sound weird, But undiagnosed adult cystic fibrosis, you're having reproductive problems, mucus problems, digestive problems. Sometimes cystic fibrosis cases slip between the cracks, and you have this odd cluster of symptoms that matches that profile. So then I started to get sent for further testing, and I came back negative for cystic fibrosis, but they did want me to do a colonoscopy because I was just so digestively sick to my stomach all the time and basically like dumping out any food I was eating. And I was put low priority because old people with polyps and colon cancer kept bumping me down the list. And then finally, when my turn came 21 months later, they couldn't even get the camera around the tumor. That's how much it had invaded my GI tract. So it was one of those cases where you look young and healthy and you're just not taken seriously because they're like, you are too fit. You were too healthy to have anything wrong with you. So it was a 5-year process to get that diagnosis.
Americans often lament the fact that there's not universal health care in the country.
Right.
Canada has that.
Yeah.
21 months is a shit ton of time. Don't care how young, healthy you are. That is a long, long time. My mind is immediately going to, this is the problem with a federalized healthcare system. Am I wrong or am I right on that?
You're not wrong, for sure. I'm very flexible. One of the things I like about the way I look at problems is I'm very good at seeing the pros and the cons from both sides of things. So as heartbreaking as that was, and definitely there was a misstep in the initial stage of going in for that pap test and further testing, on the flip side, I'm not coming out of this bankrupt from a medical health crisis, because once it was actually diagnosed, I was in surgery 3 weeks later. I was in the hospital for a week. I had a full operation paid for. I had all the aftercare. So as much as that was terrible to have to wait the 21 months for the colonoscopy, and unfortunately that did mean cancer progressed to a further state, once it was caught, everything was taken care of very quickly and very well. So I can see the low, but I can also appreciate the good, even in a messy situation, if that makes sense.
That's so interesting. Later on, you went to get a PET scan.
I think
you mentioned that it's very specific to types of cancer, yours not being one of them. So you had to get signed off, I think, in order to go get it because of the strain on the medical system, a little bit more of that sort of socialized healthcare system.
Right.
So same thing. Because it's free, but you have to get this approval, is that a feature in your mind or is that a detriment to universal healthcare?
I would probably argue with you that it is a detriment. So in terms of me getting that PET scan, because they are so costly to our shared tax dollar healthcare system, there's only a few types of cancers where they authorize them and the government will pay for it. So a really complicated brain surgery tumor that's wrapped around the spinal column, for example, or an invasive lung cancer. So with ovarian, I basically had an oncologist that I no longer work with. I call him Dr. Death. And he had just made up his mind I was going to die from this. And his approach was like, I'm real sorry. It's like pancreatic cancer. Everyone who gets this goes down within 6 months to 2 years. You need to just have your will and affairs in order. Go enjoy the limited amount of months that you have left. And too bad, so sad, sorry for your luck kind of thing. And I was like, I don't buy that. Like, I do take this very seriously. I appreciate that death is not in my direct control, but I can control everything before that happens. How I nourish myself, how I think, how I exercise, the social support I get. You know, I started watching a lot of comedy and funny things because I learned about how laughter is such a healing, supportive, form of medicine. I went amongst the trees to breathe in fresh air, terpenes, and all these other things. And so this Dr. Death, I had to beg him for his signature. I was like, I'm the one paying for the PET scan. I just need an oncologist to say, this person has cancer. Yes, she's appropriate to get a PET scan. And he's like, I don't know why you want that. There's always going to be cancer in you. It's always going to come back. It is a complete waste of money. And so I basically was very pragmatic with him. And I'm like, look, there's three scenarios. I am very actively dying, like you say I am, and I have like 4 to 6 months, and this is going to take me down. And you know what? If that's the answer, I'm not putting money in my retirement account this year. I'm going to go on some pretty awesome trips, right? Like, if that's what's happening, we're going to have a party on the way down as this plane is crashing. Or it's a little more slow growing than what you think, and I'm 34. Maybe I want to return back to work part-time because I find what I do incredibly meaningful and impactful, and I love what I get to do as a dietitian. And this will allow me to set a healthy pace between managing cancer and trying to have some semblance of a normal life. Or option 3, it's like unicorns, puppies, rainbows, and Care Bears, and there isn't any cancer in me because I've been taking great care of myself and I feel excellent, and I'm going to get that confirmation, and I'm going to have that belief that I'm going to live to my 80s, 90s, or 100s. So let's just be objective and get the data, and then I can make a life decision based on factual information. And I kind of joke, my husband gave me this nickname and I find it so endearing. He calls me Rammy because I will continue to ram and break down brick walls. You throw a wall in my way, I'm not fazed. I will ram my way through it one way or another. So I was like, if I don't get a signature from you, I'm well connected. I will figure out a way to get a signature from an oncologist and go get this scan. And so again, even the business skills of like persuasion and active listening and how to communicate where it doesn't turn into conflict, but I wanted to get what I wanted out of the conversation, which was a signature. So I even leaned into those business skills to be able to go get the PET scan. It's all just negotiation skills.
True entrepreneurship at its best right there. You ended up paying for the PET scan out of pocket then?
Yeah, I paid for two now. They're about $3,500 each, so definitely not cheap. But they're not like $15,000 either.
Right.
This is a good investment in my mental health right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. You know, I remember going in the States when I lived there. I live in the Dominican Republic now, but I remember going to a doctor about something with the heart. And they said, oh, you can get a stress test, but it's going to be out of pocket. Like you're going to, and they were making such a big deal out of it. And I'm like, well, how much is it? They're like, it's $200. I'm like, oh, okay. Let's go do the stress test. Like $3,500 is not like, you know, money I carry around in my pocket per se, but to know that I'm cancer free all day, that's money well spent. Have you talked to Dr. Death in the 5 years since you've been in remission fully?
No. After I walked out of his office and had that signature, I was like, you know what? This relationship is done. Because every time I met with him, he wouldn't even open his mind that there was an option that I could survive this. And so I was like, you're not fighting for me to live anymore. Why would I keep you in my circle of care? And this is sort of the awesome power of networking. One of the most beautiful examples of the human spirit is when I got diagnosed with cancer, because I was a dual varsity athlete in hockey and rowing. I used to be a residence RA or Don, where I lived on the floor with the first years and was like the big sister welcoming them, you know, to university. And I had worked in cancer research and I was a dietitian and I was really involved in my CrossFit community. Every single person in my life, it felt like 3,000 or 4,000 people reached out and they're like, I have this really cool skill. Here's something I can do to support you to make sure you're alive. And so one of my dear friends who I hadn't talked to in maybe like, I don't know, 5-7 years since our rowing days ended, she ended up being very high up in cancer clinical trial research, now works in California in the United States. And she was like, hey, Jen, do you want me to make some phone calls around the world and I will find one of the best ovarian cancer clinical trials and I'll try and talk to the principal investigator and let's just see if we can get you in. Like, can I gift you that? Because I have knowledge, I have expertise, I have connections. And she's like, I don't want to intrude. If that's not something you're interested in, by all means, I'll respect whatever boundaries you have. But she's like, I'll pick up the phone and figure out who I need to talk to get you in. And so I am in one of the best clinical trials here in Canada at Princess Margaret Hospital in Toronto. I think it's like the third ranked hospital in the world for cancer treatment. And she happened to connect me with the principal investigator. And a week and a half later, I was getting medical treatment there. So I do have to drive 3 hours from my hometown to, you know, get this really great standard of care. But I'm alive and well and kicking, so I can't complain about that.
Does Dr. Death know you're alive?
I don't actually know. I bumped into him when I was out in public maybe like 2.5 years later. And the look of surprise on his face, like he obviously caught my face and recognized who I was, but we were in a crowded mall and not close enough. And I wasn't going to be like, hey, I want to go say hi to you. Like I just was like, let it go. You know, one thing that I'm really proud of myself is how I navigated where the medical system really did drop the ball. So as I mentioned, I had this pap test that went awry, but no one communicated to me. And I've had a bunch of American friends go like, why didn't you sue them? Why didn't you make them lose their medical license? And at that time in the swirl of, you know, cancer treatment, surgery, my leg got like partly paralyzed from an accident in the surgery. I had to teach myself how to walk again. I mean, told I'm actively dying and only have a few months left. Energy is such a precious limited resource. So I was like, I can spend energy being mad and upset, or I can put energy into healing. And so what I decided to do, because human beings make mistakes and the people that made the mistake weren't being malicious, is I went to the endocrinologist, the gynecologist, and my family doctor. And I said, I want you to forever remember my case. I'm 34. I've really advanced stage 3 cancer now. This was caught 5 years ago, but not communicated. I'm not litigious. I'm not here to make you lose your license. Can you please use this as like one of those imprint lessons of take young, healthy people seriously? And I just said, and I forgive you. And I like kind of walked out of the office. And because when people are threatened, they go into fight or flight and their brains don't think creatively and solution oriented. People get defensive when they're being attacked. So I knew for me to save another woman's life, I needed to not be judgmental. I needed to not attack. I needed them to feel safe, because if they felt safe and they could grow and learn from this medical mistake, I hope I passed it along that some other young female will have this caught a lot earlier. But if I threaten and attack and sue and make them feel like at risk for their license, I'm not actually supporting the next patient down the line. That's how I viewed it at the time.
I think that's beautiful. That's incredible to be able to release that, because you're right. Energy is finite. But that's the logic that I'm applying to Dr. Death. I love calling him that. To Dr. Death, knowing that you're still alive. In other words, he saw you. He was shocked 2.5 years in. But what you just said is exactly what I was thinking. Like, does he need to know not to treat the next person the way he treated you? The way you've described it isn't that he was just being factual. That he was like trying to shake you into a reality that – you know, like you're going to die. Just give up. Stop.
Right.
It's a big difference between that. And I understand you're optimistic. I just need you to know what the stats are and all of that. So is the awareness that you are the one that did survive, is it enough for him to maybe change the way he treats the next person?
Well, I think he knows I'm still here, because I've had a number of his ovarian cancer patients hear my story, find me, work with me as a dietitian. And I've used nutrition as a tool in cancer healing, and they are having their cancer numbers go down, and their CA-125 and their blood work is suddenly becoming back in the normal range. And their cancer load in their body, although there might still be ovarian cancer there, is way less than expected. And so when his team is like, whoa, what's going on? They're like, oh yeah, I'm just working with Jen, like Jen Brockstrom. Remember her? The cancer girl you saw a few years ago. So I think his team is aware. And like I said, energy is very finite. And so I wanted, you know, where focus goes, energy flows. And so what's transpired in these last 5 years is I've had two businesses now that have grown in size and become super successful. I've put my energy into my own care and healing, and I'm in radical remission. And I've been cancer-free for 4.5 years now. I was in remission within 4 months of my surgery. They could not find a single bit of cancer left over. And it was supposed to have been everywhere. And I mean, just to give context to you listeners, what was removed in my surgery is, because it was so invasive, I lost my uterus, my cervix, my ovaries, my appendix, my ileocecal valve, the beginning of my large intestine, the sigmoid colon, which is the bend of your large intestine that connects to your rectum, and then a whole bunch of blood vessels and omentum. Like, they scraped me out and cut out as many body parts as they basically had to try to pull all this cancer out of me. So there was not a good chance of me bouncing out of this when I woke up from that surgery. But again, like, there always is that person in that statistic. And I was at peace that I could die. And I released the control that I didn't know what my life expectancy was anymore. It really felt like a free fall. Like, when you're in your 30s, you kind of are making decisions as if you're going to live 70s, 80s, 90s. And now I had to make decisions of, am I going to live for 2 months? Am I going to live for 2 years? Am I going to live for 20 years? Am I going to live for, you know, six more decades? And there was this exact moment, I'll never forget it. I call it the blue dress moment. I'm really minimalist. I don't do a lot of shopping. I believe in treading lightly on the earth, but being very intentional. I'm intentional with my thoughts, my words, my purchases. But I saw this blue dress when I was out in the mall. And all of a sudden I had this thought of, you're going to get on stage one day and you're going to tell this story. And this is the dress you're going to wear. And then instantly I still had Dr. Death in my ear. I was like, well, no, that's ridiculous. Like, you're only given a few more months. Now it's just going to be something you've wasted money on. And your like grieving husband is going to have to declutter this from your closet. And it's going to be one more possession to make him sad. And then I was like, whoa, I'm at this fork in the road. I can make decisions like I'm going to live, or I can make choices like I'm about to die. I have to make sure every decision I make is in alignment with life and living. So I bought the blue dress and I went on stage and I talked about this story. And that was the moment I decided I was going to make every decision as if I was going to live from that moment on.
I love that. That's incredible. Adversity didn't only find you there. You going back to 16, get a call that your father has a heart attack playing hockey, I think.
Yep.
You were playing called hockey on the ice. Hospital. Yeah. You were called to the hospital to say goodbye to him. Thankfully, he made it through. Your sister then is run over by a car. And then that plunges you into not only a passion for nutrition and fitness and sport. You played in college. I know a few different sports. But you also went through a bout with an eating disorder, if I heard right. Got down to like 90 pounds or so.
Yep.
Does any of that, with what you know of nutrition today, the eating disorder, does it at all make you more susceptible to all that you went through with cancer later on?
You know, I have thought about that. And I don't let myself dwell too much on the past and the why, because I can now look back with forgiveness at that girl who was 16, who was stressed and didn't know better and felt like her world was out of control because my dad was supposed to be dying from the Widowmaker heart attack and my sister just was run over by a car. I do wonder if it maybe hurt or had an impact on my immune system, because obviously when you're that malnourished, you're that much underweight, I was, you know, sustaining on 200 to 500 calories a day. Of course, not something you can do the rest of your life. And I went from like a healthy 130 down to like, I don't know, 92, 93 pounds. Like I looked terrible. But at the time, I just wanted to feel numb. And when you're starving, you don't feel pain in the same way because you're so consumed by this one thought of trying to get smaller and having control over food and exercise. It kind of makes everything else go quiet. School and dating and my family and my dad's health and my sister getting hurt. So it was painful, but it was only one pain I had to deal with instead of all those other painful things at the time. And so I do wonder if it probably played an impact on the health of my immune system. But at the same time, man, I am strong and resilient and scrappy, and I'm a tough person to kill, even if that was maybe self-imposed at that time. So it's only made me today a much better, more empathetic dietitian. Because I know when people struggle with food, it's not just about knowledge around healthy versus unhealthy eating. There's more life stuff connected to it. And I think I'm a really good health coach today because I know how to help people unpack the other stuff. So I always say it's about the food, but it's never about the food. And I bring that into my work today. And I think I needed to go through that experience to be the kind of healthcare provider that I am for the people I get to work with.
You're the ultimate and life happens for you in the craziest of ways, but it happens for you versus to you.
Yeah.
I look at your healing journey as happening on two different levels, and I wanted to unpack both of them very quickly here. Not even very quickly, but just to talk through them. So the first is sort of maybe about the science, supplements, exercises, foods, nutritional stuff that you saw as the most healing way. I know there's a story about ginger in there. You could talk about that. And on the second level is more on the spiritual or metaphysical level. So let's start with, what are some of the things you learned about healing from a standpoint of supplementation, herbs, exercises, whatever it might be that you could share? Because a lot of people I know that listen, they have relatives that are, or people, they are themselves going through cancer. So I'd love to hear some of the things you've learned.
Let's go pack a ton of value for you listeners, because the more that I can download my brain and give it out there to the world for free, I feel like, again, cancer happened for me so I can help others. So let me actually just go open my little cancer file on my computer. And these were some of the coolest. So, okay, a couple of things to preface all of this. I am a giant nerd, and this is going to come out majorly in the next section of this podcast. I love reading books, textbooks, PubMed articles. I love talking to scientists. I love talking to doctors. And so I did something, I guess, is a little bit weird, but it just made sense to me at the time. And I always used this phrase when I was a nutrition coach, success leaves clues. So one of the very first things I did when I was like fighting for my life is I was like, there have to be cases of radical remission out there in the world. Who are the cancer patients and who are the practitioners who have lived experience seeing someone with a really advanced cancer where they actually came out okay? There have to be cases of that in the world. There's always an example to follow. And so what I started to do is I started to go into Google PubMed or like Google Scholar and PubMed databases and searched examples of advanced cancer survivability. What was in common? And one of the books that caught my eye is called Radical Remission by Kelly Turner. I probably read it 5 times in a row. Like I read it and then I started it again. And then I read it and I read it again. And what she does is she is a scientist, a PhD researcher, who went around and did interviews with people that had stage 3 or stage 4 cancers and were basically sent home to die. Like exactly my scenario. And what she did is she divided her book into chapters on the common themes that these survivors seemingly decided to start to do, and it made a difference. So if we go into the food realm, obviously as whole food as possible, nature gets it right. There's just so much medicine in the way nature makes food. But I wasn't obsessive. So I just made sure that I always focused on positive addition, not negative subtraction. So of course, the obvious stuff, you want to decrease sugar and refined carbohydrates and alcohol and fried foods and things like that. But instead, again, that phrase of where focus goes, energy flows. I focused on all the good I wanted just to keep adding. And I used a funny, dorky visualization. I pictured myself as the cafeteria lunch lady. So every day, my little white blood cells would come in for a meal or a snack. And they were like my Navy SEAL fighters, because the immune system actively is killing cancer for you. That's what our white blood cells are designed to do. So every time I ate a meal or a snack, I pictured myself as the cafeteria lunch lady being like, okay, boys and girls, here is your protein. Here is your high fiber vegetables. Here is your colors of the rainbow. Here is cooked quinoa and legumes and tons and tons of vegetables and high quality proteins and omega-3 healthy fats and salmon and fish and things like that. And I just kept visualizing me eating that food, going into my white blood cells, and they just like blasted out like little Navy SEALs. And I was like, you go get cancer, you go find it. Like, I know you know what to do, and you're well fed and well rested. And as I started to learn in the science of PubMed and Google Scholar, you know, there's particular vegetables that are really, really filled with plant chemicals that act like chemotherapy, but there's no toxic side effect to taking in those vegetables. So I'm actually going to pull up my little list and I'll just read it. So for anyone listening, by all means, go ahead and have fun with this. Okay, so where was it? Cancer research, foods that kill cancer. We'll start with the vegetable category. So any foods that have either a high or very high chemotherapy or like chemo preventive potential basically means these plants have chemicals. These chemicals in plants kill cancer. So that's what these foods have in common. So on the high list, it's foods like asparagus, beets, broccoli, cauliflower, fiddleheads, green beans, radishes, red or purple cabbage, rutabaga, and yellow onion. And on the very, very high list, it was Brussels sprouts, cabbage, curly cabbage, garlic, green onions, kale, leeks, and spinach. So I just printed this list off, put it on my fridge, and every single meal, at least minimum twice a day, I tried to make sure I had at least two vegetables from that list two times a day. So I was getting at least four exposures.
Is raw only, or can you cook it? Does it ruin the properties if you cook it?
Yeah. So the dietitian in me goes, you want both. You actually want to have some raw, and some cooked. When you cook, you damage the water-soluble vitamins, the vitamin C and the B vitamins, but you enhance some of the minerals like calcium and phosphorus and magnesium and things like that. When you have it raw, it's more difficult to get at those healthy minerals, but the vitamins are a little bit better preserved. So this is a great example of like East meets West as well, because I pulled a lot from Western science and then I went really hyper-spiritual Eastern healing. And I was like, why not get the best of both worlds? So people pick their camp and they go to die in their camp. And I was like, what if I just stay neutral and I pull the best parts from science and spirituality and self-care and healing and ancient ways and modern ways? Like, why don't I just be a kid in the candy store picking exactly the components I think are going to help me heal? So I didn't pick a side of the fence. I just was like, in my intuition, does this make sense? And if it made sense in my intuition, I moved forward with it. And then sometimes, you know, someone would drop a suggestion and I'd go look it up in PubMed. And I was like, that doesn't really seem like that's that applicable to my ovarian cancer, because not all cancers are the same. And there were things I didn't choose to do. Like, for instance, I chose not to become a strict vegan because I wanted the protein support from an omnivore animal-based sources of protein, as an example. And this is, again, specific to me. Yeah.
And maybe my mind was racing as you were talking to some of this. Maybe you said this and it skipped through my brain as I was distracting myself. But are these types of things, I think broccoli, Brussels sprouts, are they great for preventing cancer before cancer even appears? Or is
They're
it only
for both? No. It's both. So it's a family of vegetables in the scientific community known as cruciferous vegetables. The way I explain it in layperson's terms is crunchy, stinky vegetables, although I don't find them too stinky. But yeah, if they're really crunchy, they've got a lot of fiber, they have some of those bitter plant compounds in them. They are phenomenal foods to be eating regularly to both prevent as well as treat cancer when it's actively inside of you. Now, do you want to switch to spices? So spices have a huge impact on cancer recovery as well. And the biggest ones, so if I get all nerdy, what the anti-cancer effects tend to be is, I'm just going to read off of like a PubMed journal article right now, is it's stuff like inducing apoptosis. And if you don't know what apoptosis means, it like the cell explodes and dies and breaks apart. It will cause DNA damage to cancer cells in particular. It will slow the proliferation or the growth of cancer cells. It will inhibit migration of cancer from one location to another site in the body. It helps to inhibit or reduce the expression of some of the DNA breaks that can cause cancer to grow a little bit faster. So the spices in particular that have this sort of cluster of effects are things like turmeric, black cumin, ginger, garlic, saffron, red chili peppers, rosemary, cloves. I'm just kind of looking through those. Wasabi, coriander, cardamom. If I didn't say garlic already, garlic, onions, oregano, cinnamon, black pepper. So really just the things humans have been using to make food taste delicious. And I think there's this ancient wisdom of like, why have humans traded for spices and cooked with spices and valued spices for so long? Besides they make food taste amazing, there's just these healing medicinal properties to spices. And so the funny story about ginger in particular is my rowing team got together and did a little fundraiser because my leg got partly paralyzed in my surgery. They called it a lean person injury because I was in sort of that labor position in stirrups, so that it had my, you know, belly exposed so they could have like a 32 staple incision and they were pulling cancer out of my abdomen. But because my legs were in this bent labor position, my femoral nerve, the big nerve that innervates your lower half, got pinched by the position of my leg because I was in surgery for 6 hours. So when I woke up, my leg was like a limp spaghetti noodle. It just hung there and I couldn't wiggle my toes and it was like pins and needles running up and down my leg. So my rowing team, I had a big walker and then I had a cane for a while because I had to teach myself how to walk again after my cancer surgery. And I live in Canada, middle of winter, you know, snow and ice and the sidewalks are like not easy to walk on when you have a partly paralyzed leg. So they got together and they're like, we're going to do a fundraiser and we're going to help Jen buy one of those self-propelling treadmills so she can walk indoors all winter and get her leg starting to work again. And I didn't know that the news was going to come and cover this, but our local CTV news showed up with the cameras and they're like, hey, this girl has cancer. This, you know, awesome varsity rowing team is doing a fundraiser. And somehow it got picked up in Michigan. So this man in Michigan was like watching the news and saw me on it. And our gym logo was in the background, CrossFit London. And that was the gym my husband and I owned. And so the guy just Googles CrossFit London, picks up the phone and calls us, doesn't know the connection to that. We're the entrepreneurs who own the business. My husband answers and it's this gruff old man. He's like, hi, is this the guy that owns CrossFit London? And my husband's like, yes. He's like, do you have a girl there that has like ovarian cancer right now? And he's like, yes. And he's like, well, I need to pass on this message. My wife had ovarian cancer. She was told she's supposed to die. She started taking ginger supplements. She's doing amazing. She's been alive for 17 years. Tell your wife to take ginger supplements. Click. And my husband's like, what? That's the weirdest call ever. So he comes home from work and he's like, some old man in Michigan just called to pass on the message to take ginger supplements. You cool with that? So like I hop into PubMed, Google Scholar, I start researching ginger supplements and ovarian cancer. Lo and behold, there's actually quite an evidence-based, you know, supportive research that ginger is very potent in helping ovarian cancer die. And so I started taking ginger supplements and it seemed to expedite the cancer death. So weird. I call them breadcrumbs. It was like the universe was dropping this breadcrumb trail on the ground. And I didn't exactly know why the clue was coming to me, but I just kept following the next clue as it got delivered. And I would like fact check it to feel good about it. And then I just trusted this like spiritual guidance. And I can't explain how and why it all came together, but it was just this, like, it was like little baby miracles kept being placed on a path in front of me. And I just kept my eyes and ears open. And, you know, I'll kind of now transition into the spiritual stuff. I had a yoga teacher in our community reach out, and she's like, hey, I'm a Reiki practitioner. I do energy healing work. I don't know if you've ever been open to something like that or tried something like that, but I just felt really compelled to gift you some Reiki sessions if you'd like them. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to take you up on that. That's such a sweet gift. Thank you. And all of a sudden, through the Reiki treatments, now I'm going to sound like I've lost my mind, but this legitimately happened. I was not high. I was not taking drugs. I'm just lying on a table receiving energy healing. And this is right at the point where, do I do chemo? Do I not do chemo? I had two cancers, not one. One of my cancers that was the most widespread, when I went into the scientific research, those participants died 3 weeks earlier on average. The chemo didn't have any effect on the cancer. And basically your immune system got like kiboshed in the process, and you're more likely to die had you received that chemo treatment. The other cancer I had did respond to chemo, but it was a smaller amount of the cancer that I did have, and they cut out that part of my intestine. So the team wasn't sure what was the right thing to do, so they put it to a tumor board, and the tumor board is a group of oncologists who look at special cases, and they try to help you make a decision. But I also think for liability and litigious reasons, they often lean to like, do chemo, because they're like, well, if you don't do it and we told you to, we're protected. So I wasn't sold that chemo was going to be the right thing. Again, not anti-chemo if you're listening, specific to my cancer, my situation. So enter Reiki, and I'm lying on the table. All of a sudden, I have this vision that I am like a wolf, and I'm running with this wolf pack. And there's this white wolf who kind of calls me to the side and tells me to break away from the pack. And she's like, follow me. So in my vision, I'm running with this one wolf, and we're leaving the pack behind. And she takes me to a clearing in the forest. And there's this group of like tribal elders sitting around a campfire. And they were my like spiritual tumor board. And they're like, we really want to help get this decision right for you. So we're weighing the pros and cons. We're looking at it long term, what's going to be best for you. And the wolf's like, just sit and wait. You're going to have your answer. And so we're just at the clearing of this forest, sitting around this dark campfire. And they came to me and they're like, you're going to be okay. You don't need to do chemo. But you're going to have to go against like the medical advice, go against the grain. And I woke up from that Reiki session and I was like, I felt so at peace because I had been wrestling what to do, what decision to make. And I was like, okay, I think a wolf just gave me an answer of what I'm going to do with this like big, important medical decision. And ultimately I was like, I can always change my mind. And maybe I'm a couple weeks or a couple months behind if I should have had chemo. But there is a poem by Shel Silverstein, the poem is called The Voice. You know exactly where I'm going with this. And at the same time, I don't know how this hit my newsfeed, but somehow this breadcrumb of The Voice popped up. And The Voice goes like this. I have it memorized now. There is a voice inside of you that whispers all day long. I feel that this is right for me. I know that this is wrong. No teacher, preacher, parent, friend, or wise men can decide what's right for you. Just listen to the voice that speaks inside. And so my intuition and my voice got so loud and so clear. And I just knew all the right decisions I had to make to be cancer free. And then that's when I knew I needed to do a PET scan, because at 4.5 months in, I was like, I don't feel any cancer. It's gone. Like I know it's gone. And then I had to badger for the PET scan signature, and I got the signature, and there was no cancer when the PET scan came back.
There's actually
how that all happened.
It's great. There's actually a term for that counsel that you had take place sort of in your inner being. I had the same experience. I did a psychedelic retreat with psilocybin. And my second one, that's exactly what happened. I've chronicled it on the show. I've had my integration specialist on, where we talked about, I felt like I was going to a board meeting with all parts of me. There was my ego. There was my sense of humor. There was my inner being, my intuition, whatever, all of these different pieces of me almost translating the best decision for me going forward. And I remember coming out of that thinking and getting this sort of advice, if you will, from my inner self, when you need to know, just come inside. And it's harder to recover that or get back to that without, say, Reiki or psychedelics or a deep meditation or something like that. But Joe Dispenza has carved out an entire industry, rightfully so, with quantum physics. And you're description of, I think you've watched YouTube videos of white blood cells attacking danger cells, right? So this way you could see it as you were the lunch lady talking about your Navy SEALs going into battle.
Yep.
That stuff, being able to heal with your mind, I mean, I don't know, like, to your point, it's not as evidentiary based as science, where it's like, you know, this percentage of this and this is attacks that, whatever. But there's enough of this anecdotal, your story, somebody like his story, whatever. There's enough of this out there that makes you realize, like, there's something we haven't quantified, something we haven't determined yet, but it's real. It's truly real. And you're living proof of that.
I kind of say the currency of my chemotherapy was love. Not only self-love of me sending love to the cells in my body and cheering them on and being like, I know you have this. I'm going to support you with rest, nutrition, supplements, sleep, laughter, nature, warm, sunny vacations, crying, letting tough emotions out, therapy. Like, I'm going to give you all the support I can. But the only way, and I'll just describe it because this is my lived experience, I was open to people sending love, sending thoughts, sending prayers. You know, you hear that, so like, oh, sending thoughts and prayers. But I was like, no, there are people thinking about me. There are people praying for me. There are people who want me to beat this. That was the nicest, I guess, testament that I'd been a good human at that point in my life, because people were like, we love you. We don't want you to die. We want you to stick around. Not like, huh, well, wouldn't miss her if she's gone. So I was like, oh, okay, that's a good testament. I've been making good life choices and treating people well. But what was crazy is it was like every person in my life linked arms. And I'm going to bring up the Care Bears because I'm a kid of the 80s and early 90s. I love the Care Bears. I always did this secretly where I always envisioned out of my belly, love and support and uplifting and resiliency and kindness was what I was always trying to give to the world. And then I just opened my mind that I was like, people are doing that for me. And it almost felt like I got the Care Bear stare of every single person linked arms, and this stare of love and support and positivity got shone at me. And there were days it felt like this light tingling of like Rice Krispies popping and something dissolving, but it felt very like a positive and uplifting. And I was like, there is love coming into my body right now that some other human being has thought about me and sent it my way. And it felt like the cancer was I could feel cancer dissolving. That's the only way I can describe it. I was like, something is happening on the inside. And it's just invisible rays, whether science can prove it today or in 5 years or 500 years or maybe never. But I think love is the universal energy that we all can share with one another. And I was so open to receiving it. And I think it was chemo and it killed cancer. Can't prove it, but I can only express what I felt.
You're living proof. That's the best type of proof, you know? Receptivity, was that something that you had? That's a big thing. Like, I think that, you know, with people that are, and we're going to talk about your businesses here in a second, but people that are doing well in business that have the types of lives that many of us look at and say, wow, that's incredible. They put a lot of work into it, right? They obviously, they put a lot of effort into creating this cycle of abundance or this cycle of success. But the receptiveness to that is what often blocks the ability to have success. Did you learn receptivity through this process, or did you have it going into having cancer? Do you know?
Great question. I kind of say that once I got cancer, what I didn't realize is all the skills I was building as a business owner, as a healthcare provider, as a coach, were skills I was then going to need to direct at myself. So I just always was obsessed with being the best I could be so my clients could get an amazing experience. And I was so focused on excellence, not for chasing the money, not for the ego. I just really, truly, genuinely wanted to help people. And the only way I could help them is if I kept improving my skill set. And so I would constantly learn and get certifications. And it wasn't about the titles or the credentials. It was just that I wanted to be well prepared so I could help anyone in any situation. What I didn't realize is I was building a toolbox I was going to have to lean so heavily into to help myself. So I had been reading books on business and financial success and wellness and nutrition and mindset and abundance mindset and all of these great things. Like, even just reading books on resilience was so helpful. And I would use that to help my eating disorder clients get out of like the lowest lows, battling their own inner, you know, demon with their disordered eating. And so I think I had been unintentionally receptive because I was learning that to teach others how to be receptive of that support for their own healing. And then as soon as the cancer switch came on, I was like, oh, I have all the skills I need. This is accidentally what I've been preparing for. And then I just was like, okay, I need to take a step back from working day to day because I have to now like be the person that's receiving the care and getting well. And I'm just going to pull my whole heart into this. And then I was just open to both Eastern and Western and spiritual ways of wellness. And so I was like, I'm going to take it all because why would I have to pick a side? I'm just going to take the medicine that makes sense to my intuition.
I love it. Yeah. You have two businesses today. What are those two businesses?
Yeah. So my first business is NutritionRx. That's where I'm a dietitian and I have a team that I lead and mentor to deliver wellness-based transformations, not only with nutrition, but mindset and self-care and stress reduction. And then accidentally in the pandemic, a second business got created out of the misfortune of all the gyms closing down. So I've hinted that my husband and I, it was more my husband's business, but he had a CrossFit affiliate for 16 years. And we've always had a super successful nutrition program in our facility, me being the head nutrition coach. And so when Canada was so under lockdown, this was still a really big source of income for us because we could still do virtual nutrition care and people felt really supported, even though people weren't necessarily loving having to do online workouts. And so other gyms started to reach out to me and contacted me and they're like, can my team go through your in-house training program? And cancer was how my in-house training program came about because when I knew I was going to cancer surgery, I could die. I basically hopped on camera. I had a new employee that was like 2 months into the job when I got told I had stage 3 cancer. And I was like, I need to somehow support her as a business leader. So prior to my cancer surgery, I started to film myself using my metaphors, analogies, coaching resources, games I play. And I built her a little library to be like, I might not be well for the next few months, but if you need me, here I am on camera. And this is a way that I can support you. And then I started to formalize that into more of an onboarding training program because my system was just so successful that we had more and more word of mouth that we didn't know what to do with ourselves. We had more business than we could possibly handle. So I just kept inviting like-minded health coaches and dietitians and nutrition coaches who got the vibe that it was more than just food. And then I would put them through this little training system. And then that became my way of duplicating myself and getting, you know, quality assurance across dietitians. So these other gyms started to reach out and they're like, can we kind of be flies on the wall? Can we invite ourselves into whatever magic you're doing? Because we have a nutrition program, but like we have 3 people in it. Like it's not doing well. And so then I got contacted by a business mentor who had a big community of CrossFit gyms. And he's like, you're really onto something, the way you've systematized all the gamification that you do as a coach and the way you actually teach nutrition is special and different. And you've captured that magic on camera. And so then that became Prosper Nutrition Certification, which is now a certification for any wellness, CrossFit coach, fitness coach, nutrition coach who wants to teach nutrition in a better and more impactful way. And it just mirrors the work I'm doing in my first business, essentially. So,
is that certification for Canadian-based nutritionists or is it worldwide?
Anywhere in the world. We've had about 300 students go through since the pandemic kind of kicked off. And Australia, United Kingdom, all over the US, Canada, France. I have business owners in like Europe translating it into their own language just to get the resources in German and, you know, Swiss and all this cool stuff. So it took off. I haven't paid a dollar to advertise. It was just all this quiet word of mouth of like, this really worked. We tried this. We got so many more clients and our members are so much happier and sticking around for longer. So that was the fear when I got cancer was I was like, this can't die in my brain. If I leave any one thing to this world, when my time is up, whether that's in 2 months or 2 years or 20 years or, you know, however many years, I was like, I really have honed my craft of being an amazing nutrition coach. This works. People respond. Magic happens from this. And I was like, I just have to make sure that I capture this and share this. And whether I just was going to put it up on YouTube for free and die and be like, well, it's on YouTube, the world can still watch it. And so I really started to also do a lot of freebies where I just started getting comfortable on the camera and starting to gift things out so coaches could have it. Because ultimately, I mean, I'm very proud of myself. I'm financially free. I have no debt. I'm well taken care of with the success that I've earned. So it was important to me to like leave some kind of a legacy outside of just like my own success day to day, like to really take that knowledge and give it back.
Yeah. When you say financially free, is that within the businesses or is that because of the investments you were able to make with the income from the businesses or both?
Yeah, it's across the board. So, I mean, we'll go into it, I guess, based on the nature of this podcast, but
yeah,
I recognize the privilege of the gift my parents gave me was financial education. So they were hard on me and they refused to pay for things. Like I was, they came from nothing and did well themselves. And then they're like, we're not making you an entitled brat. So when you go to school, you need to find a way to pay for school yourself. And so I was like, well, I better get good grades then, because if I get good grades, then I can get scholarships, and then scholarships are going to subsidize, you know, the cost. If I become a good athlete, again, that might help with that. So I knew right from a young age, I would have to pay for school. I worked like two or three part-time jobs all through high school. And when my parents gave us our allowance as little kids, they split it in three. So we're Canadian, we got loonies. Loonies are little $1 coins. And they would give us three loonies every allowance. And what we were taught to do was one loony, $1 was to go to our bank account for saving. One loony was to give to other people. So we would like give it to a charity or like gift it to something that our family was working towards to like, you know, we would buy like Christmas turkeys and donate turkeys at holiday season to lower income families. And as like children, we contributed our allowance and we got to see that money go serve someone in the community. And then the other dollar was ours to like spend as we wanted. And I remember we wanted this like family computer back in the day when like computers were so expensive. And my parents probably could have just gone out and bought the computer, but they wanted to teach us that we had to save for a big purchase. So every week we took our own personal dollar and we put that in the family. You know, we're buying this computer together as a family. So that's kind of where I started. And then I'm a teenager and my dad's like, so I'm going to like get you some books to read. Let's have you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Let's have you read The Millionaire Next Door. I don't know many 16 to 18 year olds that are reading those kind of books, but I started to learn what's an asset, what's a liability, what does it mean to be a business owner? What does it mean to be like a small business owner where you create a job for yourself? What does it look like to create a business where you create an empire that actually makes you money, whether you're there or not? And then my dad also happened to be a financial advisor. Like he's a top investment advisor for RBC Dominion Securities. But my parents never handed anything to us. We had to make our own money with part-time jobs. We had to save, you know, for our education. The way they got us to be adults independently is in school, in university, college, they were like, in first year, you're kind of useless. You're in school. You're figuring out a new thing. We will pay for your living expenses and you have to pay for tuition and books. And then in year two, they're like, you're kind of an adult, but not yet. So what we'll do is we'll pay 75% of rent and food. You have to cover 25% of that because you're like sort of an adult, but not fully. You still have to pay for your own school and books. By year three, they're like, you're more of an adult. We're going to knock it down to 50%. So you pay for 50% of your life expenses. We'll pay for 50%, but you still cover school and books. By fourth year, you're almost ready to be a full-fledged adult. We'll only pay for 25%. And after 4 years, so like if you want to stay in school longer, you can do whatever you need to, but like you're educated, you're an adult, you're on your own, go figure it out. And they never made it easy in a good way, but they were still supportive, but they really were teaching us how to stand on our own two feet. And so when I went to go buy our first house that we live in, and I still live in a very modest, simple house. I just had been saving for 8 years to like own a house. So my down payment was like 50% of the house. And I was like, okay, here's the down payment. Here's like half the house. And then my husband bought the house with me and I'd kind of taught him to do the same thing. So he had this massive down payment and then he just got a short-term line of credit and he like bought his half of the house in 11 months. And then we're like, oh, okay, we own a house now. That took us less than a year. Okay, that's pretty awesome. And then I just continued to always take a large percentage of the profits my business made. And I did a weird thing. I always had two jobs. I was a university professor and I was a dietitian who was building my own business. And I lived on half my professor's salary and then I invested half of it. And then I took my whole dietitian salary and never paid it to myself and I fully invested it. So then when you learn how invested money makes you money and compound interest, which again, I'm very lucky I understood that super young. That just made a whole bunch of money. So it's like my compound interest is my very best employee because it works so hard. It works 365. It doesn't talk back to me. It's always at work. And so it just, when I had cancer, I was like, oh my gosh, I have no financial stress coming into this because I'm not stressing how I'm going to pay the mortgage. I'm not stressing how I'm going to buy myself healthy food. But I've always still chosen to live well within my means and not be like flashy about it. Like if you were to like look at my house or, you know, look at the car I drive for a long time, I always wanted to be unassuming, like a secret millionaire that no one knew I was a millionaire at a young age.
A millionaire next door. Like, yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah, 100%. That's kind of that book at play. So I'm really proud of myself because I wasn't that kid that was handed it. I was taught knowledge and I was taught lessons. And then my parents reinforced the reps of that knowledge and lessons. But I ultimately had to stand on my own 2 feet to become like a self-made millionaire.
Yeah. Is it equities that you're invested in more or is it real estate or a combination?
Combination. Yeah. So equity, yeah. Stocks, bonds, real estate, a little bit of crypto, but that was more like I treated it as like fun money. If it went to zero, I wasn't going to be upset if it went to zero and happened to buy when it was lower and then Bitcoin went up. But that's not something I really count as a true investment.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
From a family perspective, I love the upbringing. I love the lessons of your parents and so on. And I can only imagine that post-cancer, you're not able to have kids of your own. I don't
Correct.
Know if you have kids or had kids before. I don't think you did. But what is the...
No.
What's the calculus for you and your family? Is it you and your husband you're deciding to go out alone or do you see adopting?
Yeah. So it's my husband and I and our dog. So I had a dog, Carly, for 14 years. She was a black lab. She sadly just passed away this summer. But I mean, to get 14 and a half years with a lab great. Is amazing. So we have a new puppy now, another black lab named Asha. And her name translates, it's Arabic. It translates to alive and well. So we're a family of two with a dog. I'm an aunt. I have a beautiful niece and nephew that I, you know, they were very young as I was going through cancer and they never knew I had cancer. They know now. So if they hear this podcast, that's okay. They actually accidentally discovered it in one of my YouTube videos because they started to binge watch my nutrition videos on YouTube. And then I'd been talking about cancer. And then my sister taught them to be mature. So they came up to me and they're like, can you explain what cancer is? You said you had it. And I was like, oh, okay. We're going to have a discussion about this. So I have a 7 and a 5-year-old or a 6 and 4-year-old niece and nephew that are, you know, growing up and really involved in their life, which is lovely. But it's okay to be childless. And I think we've made our peace. That's sort of the direction our family's going. And I put more energy into the gifts I can give the world.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. Does part of it scare, even to adopt, does part of it scare you just because of what you went through that you may not, I don't know.
Absolutely. And it would be... There was always that fear of like, what if there was a young, like it was so tumultuous to go through cancer, to go through a pandemic, all of what happened, to have a child also exposed to that sort of trauma always weighed really heavily. And my husband and I, like, we're okay. Like we really talked about together, are we good with this decision? Can we live with this the rest of our lives? And yeah, the ultimate answer is like, we are okay as a childless couple and we just have chosen to put our energy into other places we can add value to the world outside of being parents.
Yeah. What a story. Where can people learn more about you, about your businesses, about what you do? Where do you want to, what handles or websites or
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah, for sure. I'm on Instagram at prosper_NC for Prosper Nutrition Coaching. Like I had been hinting, one of my favorite gifts is to give away free nutrition coaching resources and some of those games and analogies. So if you want a free masterclass, I have one for download at prospernutritioncoaching.com/liftoff. And then we're always sort of taking 30 coaches once a quarter into the program. So if any of you, this has sparked some interest in becoming a more elevated nutrition coach, I do certify people in that area at prospernutritioncoaching.com. So all the details are on the website.
Beautiful. Jen, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for telling your story. Thanks for being so open and vulnerable.
Thank you. I hope it was helpful to whether it's veggies or spices or how to split up allowance as a little kid. I hope there was a tidbit for everyone listening today.
It definitely was. Thanks again.